Welcome to Medicare Connect Radio, sponsored by Millennium Physician Group. I'm Michelle McCormick. Every week, we're talking about healthcare issues that are important to you, whether you're 65 or older, approaching 65, or maybe just making healthcare decisions for a loved one. We invite providers and experts to share insights to help you take control of your healthcare decisions. Well, March is coming up, and it's Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month. And according to the Colorectal Cancer Alliance, in 2023, an estimated 150,000 people could be diagnosed with colorectal cancer. This disease, while deadly, is highly preventable. In this episode, we're talking with a radiation oncologist about everything from risk factors to screenings to survivorship. But first, founded in Port Charlotte, Florida in 2008 and now headquartered in Fort Myers, Millennium Physician Group has quickly become the leading independent physician group with more than 800 healthcare providers across the Southeast. Nationally recognized as a leader in value-based care with consistently high levels of physician engagement, Millennium aims to create a genuinely connected healthcare experience for patients by providing a comprehensive and coordinated approach to healthcare. And we want to be your connection to a healthier life. Learn more and schedule your next primary care visit online at millenniumphysician.com. Well, as I said in the beginning, it is Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month coming up in March. And our guest today is Dr. Paul Osi from Ackerman Cancer Center. Dr. Osi, thank you so much for being here today.
Welcome. Thank you for letting me spend the time with you today to talk about colorectal cancer.
Yes, I'm excited to learn more about that. And it's always a good topic every year with March and everyone wears blue. But first of all, let's get to know you. Tell us about you.
I don't know if many people know this probably, but I am from Jacksonville, actually born and raised in Jacksonville.
You're a local, so, like a true local. Yeah, that never happens.
No, I came back home, so it was a good feeling. But I did most of my training, medical school in Mercer in Macon, Georgia. And from there, I went down to University of Miami, Jackson Memorial, and did my radiation oncology training. I kind of fell upon radiation oncology. Third year of medical school, I was not sure what I wanted to do, and came home to Jacksonville, spent time with my family like I always did during school, and spent some time with a radiation oncologist in town, and went home that day and said, this is what I'm going to do. It fell in my lap, and I haven't turned back since.
That's awesome. Have you always practiced in Jacksonville after that?
So after I finished my residency, I joined the practice here in 1999, Dr. Ackerman and Dr. Perkins, and I've been here ever since.
And look at how it's grown.
And it has.
And we will definitely go down that path a little bit later as well with the proton therapy and everything that you guys have available for our patients in Jacksonville and beyond.
Right.
So that's awesome. All right. So colorectal cancer, also known as colon and rectal cancer, but they combine it.
Correct.
Yeah.
You combine them. Yes.
So it affects our large intestines. So let's talk about that. How does this cancer affect our bodies?
So just a little more background. So you have the large intestine, which we call the colon, which goes to the rectum. And this is what we're talking about, those organ systems. It affects our body in a sense that sometimes it can be quite silent. And that's why we need to be more aware of this, and screening is so important. The silence can be sometimes deadly for us. So doing early screening and paying attention to our body and symptoms is very important for this cancer.
Yeah. And some of the statistics, colorectal cancer is the third most common cancer diagnosed in the United States every year.
Correct. Correct. Excluding skin, it is the third most common. You see roughly about 100,000 cases for colon and about 50,000 roughly for rectal cancer.
Yeah. So they are separate.
They are separate. We treat them differently, and that's kind of why they separate them. So treatments are quite a bit different for both of them.
Okay.
And that's why we do separate them. Though they're under one category, treatments are quite different for each of them.
Okay. Yeah. Great. We'll definitely talk about that coming up too. So let's talk about risks. Your risk factors, modifiable, unmodifiable. People kind of, it gets murky.
Right. So if you look at some of the risk factors that you can control that we feel like are connected to colorectal cancer, obesity, lack of physical activity, of course, what we eat, a lot of red meats, a lot of processed meats, and then smoking and alcohol. Those are some of the risk factors that we can control that affect us for that. As far as things that you may not be able, you really cannot control, your age, like anything else, as we get older, risks go up for most cancers. Personal history, whether it's through genetics, through family, or through some other bowel syndromes you may have, whether it's irritable bowel syndrome or family polyposis. These are things that you can't control, But these are things that you should be aware of to increase screening when you do have these things. So those are the categories as far as some risk factors.
Yeah. And so have the screening ages changed over the past few years for colon cancer, if you have a history or not?
So if you have, let's back up, for example, risk factors, whether it's genetics or some other bowel syndromes, they do start recommending screening as early as 45. Mm-hmm. Family history, they also, if there's a family history of someone who had colon cancer, they also recommend screening earlier. If you don't have any of those risk factors, most start at 50.
Okay. All right. That's good. And what's an inherited syndrome?
So an inherited syndrome is something that's passed down genetically through it's usually a recessive trait that's passed down from parents to a child. And that genetically is something you can't control, but that can put you at a risk depending on what traits pass down for either a higher risk of colorectal cancer.
Okay. So, let's say as I age, my stomach's just, it hurts a lot more. What are signs and symptoms? And many people will ignore them, especially if we're busy, we have kids, we have a lot going on in our lives. What are we ignoring that could be wrong?
So for colorectal cancer, there's not many symptoms, at least in the early stages, other than you might see a little blood in your stool. However, even then, a lot of times you may not even recognize it because it changes colors and may blend in. So it's very difficult sometimes to find early stage colon cancer from symptoms. More advanced cancers that get ignored or not realized then potentially could start causing problems, whether abdominal pain or obstruction, but those are usually more later on in the course of the cancer. Mm-hmm. But in early stages, it's much more difficult to find. Some of the things would be blood, as I mentioned, maybe a change in bowel patterns, maybe a change in caliper of the stool, we said, whether it's become thinner or not, or some abdominal cramping, mm-hmm. things of that nature. So those are some of the potential symptoms one might see from a physical standpoint.
And does it start with, I woke up, I had this problem, I'm ignoring it, and I'm not quite 45 yet, let's say. So what do you do, colonoscopies early?
Again, depending on some of the symptoms, some may start as early as first just doing a CAT scan of the abdomen or pelvis just to make sure there's nothing that we can see radiographically. However, once you start getting more specific with that, you could start something as early as some stool tests. Sometimes they can be done at the doctor's office. Sometimes you can take them home. There's the fecal immunochemical test. That is not as dependent on one's diet and as far as medicines you take, and that does pick up little traces of blood. Mm-hmm. You've got the guaiac stool test, which is more dependent on food you eat and medications. Again, that's picking up traces of blood. That doesn't mean you have colorectal cancer, but that's one symptom that's going to require additional testing, but it's a very simple and quick test to do. Then you get into more bigger tests, including something called a flex sig, we call it, which is not done as much anymore. It just really evaluates the lower part mm-hmm. of the colorectal area. Really, the gold standard, if one is worried about colorectal cancer, is your colonoscopy. Mm-hmm. And that's where the patient is put to sleep. You actually visualize everything from the opening, from where the rectum, anal rectal region is, all the way down, all the way up to the, almost to the small intestines opening. So you get the visualization of the whole colon.
Right.
And that is the gold standard.
It is. And I've had it, my mom's had it, my husband, I mean, we've all had a colonoscopy, I hope, by the time we turn 50. If not, then, start looking ahead to that. But now I know they have, Dr. O.C., they have like a ColorGuard, stuff you can do at home.
Right. So there's a newer test, as you just said, and it looks more at the DNA. So again, there's certain screening tools that you can or can't use. So you can have a high risk of colon, can't have family history, shouldn't have any high risk features, shouldn't have any bowel issues, genetic mm-hmm. features. Those are the ones that could go for these DNA tests to see. And as long as you're not a high risk to have those features, then every 3 years you could do one of these tests.
Okay.
And though that seems to be the way it appears to be going for a lot of patients who are low risk, where you can do these tests every 3 years and be fairly reliable and comfortable in knowing your results are negative. If you get a questionable test on one of these DNA tests, these newer tests, then again, the gold standard would be colonoscopy. But up until then, you could do these tests.
Okay. All right. Dr. Paul Osi with Ackerman Cancer Center is our guest today. And when we come back, we're going to continue our conversation with Dr. Osi. We're going to focus on more of the screenings, prevention. We'll talk a little bit about that and treatments. So stick around. Medicare Connect Radio, sponsored by Millennium Physician Group. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Medicare Connect Radio, sponsored by Millennium Physician Group. I'm Michelle McCormick. Every week, we're talking about healthcare issues that are important to you, whether you're 65 or older, approaching 65, maybe you're making healthcare decisions for a loved one. We're inviting providers and experts to share insights to help you take control of your healthcare decisions. March is Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month, and according to the Colorectal Cancer Alliance, in 2023, an estimated 150,000 plus people will be diagnosed with colorectal cancer. This disease, while deadly, is highly preventable as well. In this episode, we are talking with radiation oncologist Dr. Paul Osi from Ackerman Cancer Center. And Dr. Osi, thank you for being here. We had a great talk in the first segment about risk factors, signs and symptoms, perhaps, of colorectal cancer, the difference a little bit of the two. Now, let's continue. Let's take a deeper dive into what you call the gold standard, the colonoscopy. And we know that, you know, part of screenings that, especially at 45 and over, you got to have. My mom at 72-ish just had her first colonoscopy. I almost beat her over the head. Wow. I was like, what took you so long, Mom? This is the silent killer for a reason.
Right. And by all means. And no one wants to go have a colonoscopy. I mean, really.
Because drinking that stuff is so great.
and the effects of drinking it. And no one wants to do it.
You lose a couple pounds, right?
That's the benefit, but you gain it right
you
back.
You gain it right back.
But it still serves a really good purpose because it's all these other screening tools we talked about, whether it's the GWAG test, you know, even the DNA test, none of those replace the colonoscopy. These are good screening tools, but none of them are a replacement when you really need to know.
Yeah. And to be clear, you don't perform colonoscopies.
No, I do not.
Yeah.
I do not.
We'll get to what you do on the other side of the colonoscopy, but let's walk through it. Yeah.
But as far as an oncologist goes, we need to know about all the screening tools for all cancers because we talk to patients about this. It comes up. They ask about it for family members and what to do. So though I don't actually do those, I knew a fair amount about it, and much less we talk about it with our patients all the time.
Right. So how do you explain a colonoscopy?
So a colonoscopy is the best way to get the clearest picture of the colon from the inside. And to do that, your colon has to be very clean. And this is probably what most people feel is the worst part about a colonoscopy is you have to do what we call bowel prep. And that bowel prep basically is cleaning your insides of your colon. And the medicine that you drink actually stimulates the bowel to push everything out. It is difficult for some patients. It keeps you up throughout the day or at night, depending on when you do the prep. But without a good prep, you'll end up having to repeat the colonoscopy again in the future. Mm-hmm. And so following the instructions and cleaning out the colon as best you can and following that prep really eliminates having to go back a second time if needed be.
Because
if you do the colonoscopy and you can't see all the inside of the colon, then it defeats the purpose of doing it. But after you complete the prep, then you go to have you at the colonoscopy. You are put to sleep. You're with an anesthesiologist, so you're not going to feel the procedure at all. This scope is actually a fiber optic scope with a very bright light on the end of it, and it basically tracks. They enter from the anal rectal region, and they basically track the scope all the way through the colon, going through all the way till you get to the small bowel. And if there's questionable areas, they take pictures of them. They even take pictures of normal areas just to show everything is going well. If they see any areas that look suspicious, whether it's a area of redness or a little raised area, they will always, always biopsy. Even if they don't think it's concerning, it's until you get it under the microscope with a pathologist to tell you what's going on, you don't know. So biopsies are crucial if they see anything that looks suspicious. Once the procedure is done, which shouldn't take more than 20
right, it's usually
minutes,
pretty short.
20 minutes. You go through recovery. Once you get out of recovery, which doesn't take long, just take it easy that afternoon and you should go back to normal activities the next day. It takes a couple days. If they did a biopsy for a polyp that they see or some other abnormal area that looks suspicious, usually takes about 3 days to get the reports back from the pathologist.
Okay. Yeah. I recently took a friend of mine who to have her colonoscopy done. They removed 8 polyps.
Okay.
And they were all clear, I guess, or clean.
Right.
But she has to go back in 3 years.
Correct.
So, and she's not 50 yet. So just right. with family history.
With a family history, they'll do it every 3. If you did a colonoscopy and they didn't find anything, then it'd be every 5 years. Mm-hmm. But with either family history, if they find polyps, then they usually bring you back in 3 years.
Yeah, and I'm that person that gets all giddy about the photos. I like seeing the clear, you know. I don't really know what I'm looking at, but there's nothing along the sides. When I saw the pictures, I was like, okay, this looks clean to me. You know, I get all giddy like that. Right. So as far as the visual exams, the colonoscopy falls under that. Mm-hmm. So what is, there's a CT. Right. Also,
so there's another way to try to look at the colon. Again, I don't. It's a good test, but when you really need the answer, mm-hmm. colonoscopy they go. But it's called a CT, a colonographic, and that is basically looking at a 3D image of the colon. It's a combination of X-rays with CAT scans, and then it's reconstructed. The CAT scan pictures are reconstructed in the computer, and you literally get a 3D image of the colon. It's a very clear picture. Mm. If you see any little areas that look suspicious or raised, you should be able to see them. Case in point, then from there you go back to.
I was going to say you still have to go have the colonoscopy to have those removed.
Correct.
Because there's no other way to get that out.
There's really no other way to be sure.
Okay. All right. Makes sense to me. So, what else do we need to know about the golden standard besides yes, this is something you have to do, and then we'll get to what you do following that.
You know, really, that's it, and then just keeping. Idea of knowing your own body. You want to see if there's any changes to your body. Just because you have a negative colonoscopy doesn't mean 3 years from now if you develop some symptom, you ignore it. Oh, I had a negative test. So knowing your body about any cancer, knowing about changes that may occur, it's probably the key to all of this. If you pay attention to yourself, you're going to find things or realize things before any test or before any doctor majority of the time. You just use the test and us. Physicians help get you to the point to get answers, but you need to know your body. So any symptoms, as we talked about earlier, whether it's cramping or change in bowel patterns or any potential blood you might see, those are things that you need to not ignore.
Yeah, Dr. Osi, I think that's awesome advice. Now, let me ask you this. Since colorectal cancer is known as the silent killer, is it because it's a slow-growing cancer?
Well, I don't like to use the word slow-growing
okay.
because
right.
you don't ever know whether the cancer, as we classify it, slow or fast growing, you know, there's different ways they grow and speeds they grow. The reason it's more, I think, a silent killer is that it, as it's growing, it needs to get fairly large before it causes symptoms.
Okay.
Majority of the time, as a cancer grows, the risks go up as it chance of it spreading, the stage goes up, the chance of lymph nodes being involved. So the earlier you catch something, the more likelihood you're going to be able to cure this cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why they call it, in a sense, silent to some extent, because it needs to get fairly large before it really causes symptoms many times.
Okay. All right. So, and you know, 3 years, in case in point with my friend, 3 years between 8 polyps being removed,
right.
3 years is okay?
Yeah. For the most part, 3 years should be okay. For
yeah.
That's not, you know... Again, they were all benign. Now, if there was a question of the polyp where it showed some what we call atypical cells or something that didn't look not cancerous but not exactly normal, they may bring her back even sooner.
Okay, okay.
But by having them benign, 3 years is plenty.
All right. Well, that's good to know. Now, what are some of the other diagnostic tests? Are there other things? We kind of talked on some of these before. I have here blood tests. Let's talk about the proctoscopy.
So
did I say that right?
So you got other – there's other – these tests really don't look at the whole colon.
Okay.
I mentioned the FlexSig is one that lowers the bottom half, looks at the bottom half
yeah.
of the colon. You've got the proctoscope, which literally just looks at even a lower part than that. So these are just
okay.
tests that they really don't really represent what a colonoscopy would do and give you a full visualization.
Okay.
So they're not used as often for what we're talking about.
Screening. Yeah. Is rectal cancer the same with a colonoscopy?
So rectal cancer, no. Rectal cancer, since it's lower down, you know, in the colon area, it's something that you don't need a full colonoscopy on. You could do a proctoscope or even a FlexSig and see what you need to see. That a lot of times, digital rectal exam with their finger is more than enough to even feel a lesion down in the rectal area. So that is,
okay.
you don't need colonoscopies to diagnose rectal cancers a lot of times. You would do a procedure to get a biopsy, but you're able to do other exams, as I just mentioned, a lot of times for something like that.
Okay. And which is more common?
So colon cancer incidence is over 100,000
yeah.
a year. Rectal cancer is half that, probably about 50. So colon cancer is much more common than rectal cancer.
Okay. Can colon cancer spread to rectal cancer?
Usually not. It's usually They act like two separate. That we're calling colorectal, they almost act like two separate cancers.
Okay. All right. Well, good to know. All right. Our guest today is Dr. Paul Ossi from Ackerman Cancer Center. And when we return, we are going to talk about the treatment options, what happens in the office of Dr. Ossi. So stick around. Medicare Connect Radio, sponsored by Millennium Physician Group. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Medicare Connect Radio, sponsored by Millennium Physician Group. I'm Michelle McCormick. Every week, we're talking about healthcare issues that are important to you if you're 65 or older, approaching 65, or maybe you're just making healthcare decisions for a loved one. We invite providers and experts to share insights to help you take control of your healthcare decisions. March is coming up, and it's Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month. And according to the Colorectal Cancer Alliance, in 2023, an estimated 153,000 people will be diagnosed with colorectal cancer. This disease, while deadly, is preventable. We're talking with our guest today, Dr. Paul Ossi from Ackerman Cancer Center, a radiation oncologist. And Dr. Ossi, we have talked about all things around this. Let's talk about now. You've had the colonoscopy. You had polyps. They were removed. You received bad news. You know, that's not what you want to hear. How do we first find you, you know, after we've heard our diagnosis?
So, in treating colon and rectal cancer, it's multiple groups of physicians that you should treat. Usually your team of doctors would consist of a surgeon, a medical oncologist, and a radiation oncologist for certain colorectal cancers. For most colorectal cancers, after the diagnosis is made, surgery is usually one of the first steps, mainly for colon cancer. And we'll mm-hmm. start with colon first
okay.
and go to rectal.
Yeah, sounds good.
So for colon cancer, usually surgery is it. They usually get a biopsy. They have a diagnosis of something. Patient needs to go to surgery and have that part of the colon removed. Once that colon is removed, we then get an official, what we call a pathologic stage, where the pathologist tells us how big the tumor was, what it invaded as far as through the colon, or if it was a very shallow, superficial, and then whether there were lymph nodes involved. Mm. Because all of that matters for future treatments going forward, if you even need them. If this is caught very early, and if it's early stage, surgery, quote unquote, would be what we consider your cure. You wouldn't need to do any chemotherapy of any sort or radiation. As the stage of the cancer goes up and becomes more advanced is when you start needing to look at, especially with colon cancer, for chemotherapy. So radiation, and I'll talk about in a minute, is not used as much for colon cancer. Really, chemotherapy is the mainstay of care for colon cancer for those more advanced stages that are not early stages we mentioned. In addition to chemotherapy, there's also newer drugs called immunotherapy, which we can touch upon, which uses the own body's immune system to kind of supercharge it in a sense mm-hmm. To help fight the cancer. Very advanced colon cancers where sometimes they go through the wall and into, sometimes patients, unfortunately, it goes, ignore symptoms and you get very large cancers that actually eat through the wall or almost invade through the wall into the side of the pelvis or in the abdomen area. That's usually when radiation would come in because there's concern of local invasion outside of the colon. Then okay. one would use radiation very specific in that area in addition to the chemotherapy.
Wow. Uh-huh.
So as far as colon cancer, that's how that is handled.
And is it, when diagnosed, is the only thing to take part of the colon? Okay.
Yeah. You truly just take that part of the colon that they need to remove to take care of that cancer.
Okay. So not the whole colon?
No.
Okay.
No. There, and depending on the blood flow of the colon, mm-hmm. on where it's located, depends on what part of the colon they remove.
Okay.
So it all has, and that's more of the surgeon's technique on how the colon is supplied in certain vessels. And also they've got to be very careful when they're doing that type of surgery.
Okay. All right. So then after the surgery, mm-hmm. what are the next steps?
So, again, early stages, we just follow them regularly, and we can talk about follow-up and survivorship
sure. mm-hmm.
towards the end. If it's more advanced, then they would see the medical college to talk about, you know, systemic chemotherapy, which is chemotherapy in the veins and or immunotherapy, and that could go on for many, many months.
Okay.
And then the really advanced would get chemotherapy in a sense. Certain circumstances, you'd use radiation for those tumors that seem to go through the bowel.
And that is when we come see you?
And that's when you'd come see me.
Correct. Okay. All right. So let's walk through that.
All right. So at least for this, and again, for colon cancer, radiation is not used as much as it is mm-hmm. for rectal cancer.
Okay.
But those tumors that go through the wall, there's always concern there's residual disease outside of the colon in the abdominal area somewhere, whether it's in the soft tissue somewhere. So radiation is used on a daily basis for about 5 weeks to treat that one area to help kill any what we consider microscopic disease in that area.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the role for the radiation in that situation.
Okay. All right. So what about rectal?
So rectal's done quite a bit differently, I guess, in some sense. So most rectal cancer, there's been a transition of rectal cancer over the last 25 years. So most rectal cancers today are treated with radiation and chemotherapy up front. The whole goal behind that is to try to reduce and shrink the tumor as much as possible, followed by surgery.
Okay.
So when someone has a rectal cancer, depending on its location, the surgery could be quite severe for the patient in the sense that they may end up with a colostomy.
Yeah.
So the whole goal behind shrinking the tumor is to give the surgeon as much room as they can to remove the tumor, resect the rectum that needs to, and be able to reconnect so a colostomy does not need to be given. So that's why we've shifted over the last 20, 25 years from chemo and radiation first, followed by surgery, then the other way around.
Okay.
So so that's where radiation comes in a big play in this situation. And the chemotherapy is given as a sensitizer to help shrink the tumor as much as possible.
Okay. All right.
That radiation is done on a daily basis, Monday through Friday, again, for about five and a half weeks, somewhere in that category. It takes only about 30 minutes a day, and patients usually tolerate it quite well.
Yeah, and what case would you use a proton?
So proton is very good in this same situation. So we got many forms of radiation to use. Photon radiation, proton radiation, we have something called electrons. We've got a gamut of different forms of radiation
okay.
to use. But in something like rectal cancer, proton would be very effective. The main effectiveness on proton, or one of the main effectiveness of proton, is it's able to help spare as much tissue around the rectum, which hopefully will minimize and should minimize long-term and short-term issues from the treatment and should help the surgeon. So if you have less scarring around the rectum from the radiation, then the surgery should be easier for the surgeon.
Okay.
And that's where proton really comes in, especially something like this.
So does that ultimately the type of radiation that's done with the type of cancer, colon, rectal, does that come down to your decision?
So yeah, it does. We have a discussion with the patient, tells about the pros and cons of the different forms of radiation. A lot of it depends on the type of cancer. More importantly, the location of the cancer and what's around it. And that's really what comes into play. And that's where a lot of times proton can outshine other forms of radiation because of its location around other structures. And that's really where it comes in. And that's where it comes into education, educating the patients to let them know, you know, the pros and cons of the different type of treatments.
Yeah. Dr. Osia at Ackerman Cancer Center. Also, what other support are you offering for these patients who are just learning about this and their options and trying to sort through all of it?
So I like to always say that the staff around us make us look good. And I really do mean that.
It's true.
I mean, at Ackerman Cancer Center, it's not just the docs and the nurses there, but we've got social workers there that are there full time. We've got navigators to help patients go from place to place. We help get patients back and forth if they need help. We have all types of services that we can offer the patient. After treatment, we've got different organizations through for survivorship and groups for patients to be able to reconnect with other patients. So with us, it's not just the treatment. It's the treatment and after that we're with you walking side by side.
Right, right. And, you know, let's talk about that real quick. You touched on the after, you know, the survivorship part of it. Let's kind of talk about that because we always want to see the light at the end of the tunnel.
Right. So, you know, once your treatment is finished, you still need to be engaged with your radiation oncologist and your surgeon and your medical oncologist. Being seen regularly, especially in the first year or two, and as you get further out from your treatment, the appointments start to get spread out. But in the initial stages, we see you quite regularly, every 3 months usually, there's the beginning. Blood tests need to be done. There's certain blood levels that we look at just to monitor, especially for colon cancer, make sure things are quiet. CAT scans are usually done to make sure we don't see any growths anywhere or lymph nodes enlarged. Colonoscopies are done as follow-ups. So all these things happen just because you finish your treatment on a regular, pretty scheduled basis, more often in year one. And as year two, three, four, and five go, the appointments start to spread out, you know, and tests are done less often.
Mm-hmm. Is there an age, a maximum age that a colonoscopy wouldn't be done at?
So, you know, interesting enough. So age really depends. I don't look at just age for anything. I have some 60-year-olds that I wouldn't do anything to because mm-hmm. they're medically in that bad shape. And I've got some 80 and 90 year olds that could run circles around 60 year olds. So yes, we do have to keep age mm-hmm. in mind, but to me, it's a much bigger picture than age. A lot of times I like to know the patient's history. I like to know their lineage. I like to know how long their parents lived and their brothers and sisters. I like to get an idea of their health too. And I take all that into consideration before I recommend something or not.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to give a bit, little bit of a summary of what we've talked about today for the importance of Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month coming up in March. Our guest is Dr. Paul Osi from Ackerman Cancer Center. So stick around. Medicare Connect Radio, sponsored by Millennium Physician Group. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Medicare Connect Radio, sponsored by Millennium Physician Group. I'm Michelle McCormick. Every week, we're talking about healthcare issues that are important to you, whether you're 65 or older, approaching 65, or maybe just making healthcare decisions for a loved one in their golden years. We are inviting providers and experts to share insights to help you take control of your healthcare decisions. Well, coming up in March is Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month, and we are talking today about, while this disease can be deadly, it's also a bit preventable with some screenings and all that good stuff, colonoscopies. We've talked a lot about today. Our guest is Dr. Paul Osi from Ackerman Cancer Center, and Dr. Osi is a radiation oncologist. And thank you so much for being here today and really just kind of really getting into the weeds, if you will, about colon cancer and rectal cancer. So let's just summarize a little bit for the viewers, you know, the difference between the both of them, some of the risk factors and signs and symptoms.
So, I mean, if you look at from what we've talked about from beginning to end, the first thing is, pay attention to your body. That is probably the golden rule. Just, you know yourself better than anyone. You notice any changes and it's continual, then you need to get it looked into. If you notice any symptoms of bloating or bleeding or weight loss or just being very tired or just any of those symptoms, you need to get it looked at. Not that it's related to colorectal, but those are clues there's something going on.
Right. And you can start that at your primary care level.
Correct. You start that right at your primary care level, and that is a first good step. And they and the primary care physician will know where to go from there and what to do.
Right.
It's very simple. Things that you can do regarding colorectal cancer that you can help yourself in, whether you've got risk factors or not, I mean, family risk factors or not, is like a lot of things that we do when we talk about cancer is exercising, taking care of yourself, eating well, not being overweight, tobacco and alcohol. These are things that are in our control.
Mm-hmm.
So it's up to you to take responsibility of yourself and your body and treat it well.
Right.
And from there, if unfortunately you are having symptoms, those simple tests could be something as simple as a stool test or the DNA test we talked about. But of course, the gold standard would be the colonoscopy. And unfortunately, if you are diagnosed with colorectal cancer, there are a lot of options. There are a lot of good options today, especially if you're doing your screening and things are caught early, plenty more options. And as far as curing the cancer, much better chance.
Yeah. And there's survivorship. I mean, if caught early, there's a 90% chance, right?
Right. Caught in the early stages, you got a 90% chance of being cured of colorectal
cancer. Those are pretty good odds.
Those are great odds.
Yeah. So,
and that's the key of just paying attention and catching it early.
Yeah. And colonoscopies start at 45 now.
So those patients who have high risk factors, either someone in your family has it or they have some of the genetic traits that we talked about or other risk factors for bowel syndromes, starting by 45. Anyone else, usually by 50.
Okay. And you don't perform the colonoscopies.
We don't perform the colonoscopies. But as an oncologist, once that diagnosis is made, we're able to help patients stream through all their treatments from a surgical standpoint, from a medical oncology standpoint, from a radiation standpoint. We're able to help guide them through all of their treatments along with our staff, social workers, the navigators, and all the support staff.
Right. And you do way more than colon, rectal cancer, radiation oncology.
Pretty much we treat almost really all cancers. The only mm-hmm. maybe leukemia are the ones we don't really deal with much anymore. But beyond that, there's really almost really all cancers that we take care of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And let's talk again briefly the difference between colon cancer and rectal cancer.
So colon cancer treatments are usually surgery, more like some type of systemic treatment, whether it's chemotherapy, immunotherapy. Radiation is used for more advanced stages in colon cancer. Rectal cancer, pretty much radiation, chemo up front, and then they look at doing surgery after that.
Okay. All right. So Dr. Osi is with Ackerman Cancer Center, and you guys have several locations across the Northeast Florida region.
Great. Yeah, we have grown over the last 20 years. Our first office was in Riverside. Then it grew out to our main office now, which was Ackerman Cancer Center out in our Mandarin facility. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, we have our office up in Amelia Island.
Right. And you have the proton therapy, which is at the Mandarin one.
So interesting about the proton, we're the only physician-owned proton private center, and that's the one at our Mandarin facility.
I remember when that was built. It was a big deal.
It's a big project.
Yeah.
Yes. So it's a, you know, it's something to be proud of here in Jacksonville.
Absolutely. Physician, you know, owned. I'd love it. I love it. And now Amelia Island in Nassau County.
Correct.
And a new location
in Riverside.
So okay. So kind of back to where you started.
Back to where we started. New location, Riverside. And, all the centers, we can see patients. We see the day they call or the following day, depending on what their schedule is. But, you know, we're there to help the patient. And I tell staff this all the time. Patients don't come see us to have tea and coffee. They come there because they have an issue. We're there to help them. Mm-hmm. We're there to help guide them and give them advice to get them through their treatment.
Yeah, and support groups and support staff, you are right on about that. Now, if I'm experiencing all this and I need to go have a colonoscopy, you're not going to be my first call.
Correct.
Okay.
No. Like you said, your primary physician usually will get that process started, and then you go from there. We have patients that we do refer for colonoscopies that I see in follow-up and other things. So it's not that we can't do it, but it's usually not our first call. But we have more than the capability of doing that and referring if need to be.
Let me ask you this question. A patient who's had cancer and have gone through treatments and stuff, are they at a higher risk for a colon cancer or rectal cancer?
So certain cancers do put patients at risk for future cancers, mm-hmm. and certain ones do not.
Okay.
So, I mean, if you have a risk for colorectal, you're going to need screening more often because there is a little bit of, there is more of a concern. But as the years get away, those screenings then go back to baseline.
Okay.
With normal population. But in the beginning, we would.
Okay. All right. Well, Dr. Osi, let's give your phone number. I have 904-990-5250. That's the Riverside location.
Correct.
Right. And then you can go to AckermanCancerCenter.com, of course, for all sorts of information.
Correct.
Your bio's there. I learned a lot about you there, except that I didn't know you were from Jacksonville. So it should be on there for all of us locals. But anything else you want to leave the listeners with today?
No, I mean, I think we've covered it really well. The take-home message is always just pay attention to your body.
Yeah, I think that's a great piece of advice. Thank you so much for being here today, sir. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
The conversation will continue next time on Medicare Connect Radio. Millennium aims to create a genuinely connected healthcare experience for patients by providing a comprehensive and coordinated approach to healthcare. Just want to be your connection to a healthier life. Learn more and schedule your next primary care visit online at millenniumphysician.com. In good health, I'm Michelle McCormick. Have a great day.